Welcome to the Life Over Coffee Podcast, conversations for transformation.
Every home is a laboratory where parents have the privilege of incrementally introducing their children to the culture around them, letting them know about that place where they're going to spend, well, the overwhelming majority of their lives. This incremental child development process prepares them to live in and engage in their world as adults, while not being overcome by the culture. Thank God that He gives us a laboratory so that we can, in many cases, have at least 2 decades to prepare them to step into the harsh realities of the world that we know so much about. The proactive and intentional parent, they do not wait until the child is an adult to teach them how to live well as an adult. Hey, you're now 20. I want to introduce you to a word. It's called adult. I want to teach you how to live in the adult world. Well, that would be a major parenting mistake. We want to parent them with faith, grace, and courage, and we want to do that early on, starting at zero. The moment that they were born, we want to begin setting a trajectory and a pace for them to step into God's world as young men and women under His authority. Of course, for many of us parents, we have what I call parental fear, something that I am quite familiar with, the most common struggle that caring parents have to deal with daily when it comes to their children. And by the way, parental fear is not just for their children. As you talk to grandparents, well, they have a similar fear too as they think about their grandchildren. Now, it makes sense to me because I am one of those parents. I, like you, want our children to have a fantastic life. I also want them to love God with all of their hearts, souls, minds. I want them to love others as they love themselves. But I'm also aware of my faith-fear tension daily. Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Some days I worry and other days not so much, and typically it's their behavior that manipulates my worry. Or maybe stated more theologically accurately to say that it's their behavior that identifies pre-existing worry in my soul. And so I have this worry, don't worry tension, always doing battle in my heart. If they are behaving well, then I don't worry so much, but it doesn't mean that that worry is not there. It is. If they are not acting well, there it is. But the worry shows up, and it would not be a stretch to say that I can project their current failures into the rest of their lives. You stole that candy, you're going to be in prison for the next 50 years. And we want to be careful that we don't map our stories or our childhood experiences or our fears over them. We want to parent, again, with faith and grace and courage. To think about how our children can control me so quickly does not speak well about my orthodoxy, faith in God, or my orthopraxy, how I live out my faith in God. However, my weakness does lead me to ponder my parental focus, and I hope that it will cause you to ponder your parental focus as well if you have children. Usually, there's 2 incisive diagnostic questions that I ask myself on a regular basis. Number 1, am I more aware of God's goodness and faithfulness to me when our child is behaving poorly? When your children are behaving poorly, and maybe you have a rebellious child at this point in your parenting journey, I would encourage you to look in the rearview mirror, and you should see, assuming that you have been walking with the Lord for a while, you should see God's goodness and faithfulness to you. And that's what needs to not just hover over your heart, but it needs to control your heart, especially if you have a child who is behaving poorly. The second question is, am I controlled more by my unexpectations of our child? Not only can we be managed by their behavior, but we can be managed by our expectations of them as well. How you answer these questions not only determines your level of worry and anxiousness over your children, but it also influences how you respond to them as it does me. this issue is especially acute when they are not meeting my expectations. And so what about you? How would you answer those two questions? I would encourage you to stop the tape. Maybe even ponder those questions at this point. And if you have a spouse or a mentor, someone in your local church that you can speak with, I would encourage you to do so, especially if you're overly managed by your child's behavior. If trusting God is your characterization during parental situational challenges, even though you may not have perfected your trust in God, then you will parent with faith, with grace, with courage, and with joy. And I would want you to guard your heart at that point, because every one of us have worried about our children. Every one of us have been managed by our expectations of our children. And so you always want to distinguish between these episodic moments where we can lose our minds and patterns in our lives. And I trust that for the majority of you, that your pattern is you parent with faith, grace, courage, and joy. Every now and then you have an episodic moment where you lose your mind, but you get back on the track where you should be. If your unmet parental expectations regarding your child do manage your heart, it's more than an episodic moment, but it is a characterization. This is your pattern, habituation. Then you will be tempted to succumb to a plethora of parenting traps. I'm going to mention just six of the more common traps that I have seen in counseling, which I do have some experience with regarding our children as well. If we are not parenting with faith and grace and courage and joy, and it's a pattern in our lives to over-worry what our children are doing, then one parenting trap is you can succumb to the temptation to control your child, and that would be a dangerous mistake. Number two, you can succumb to the temptation to be dictatorial without appeal. Number three, you can succumb to the temptation to be self-reliant, not trusting God at all. By the way, worry is the evidence of self-reliance. Worry says that God may not get it right. If we were truly trusting in God and His goodness and kindness and faithfulness, we know that He's going to get it right, though we might not know what right is. But if we're trusting in Him, then we're not worrying. And so the worrying person is a self-reliant individual. They believe that what they do is what's going to make this all right. They are worried, they are concerned that God will not do it well. Number four, they will succumb to the temptation of fear. Number five, they will succumb to the temptation to overreact. And then finally, number six, parenting trap for the worrying parent. They will succumb to the temptation to overshelter. One of the overarching expectations that hover over our parenting desires is to have the perfect 6-year-old, the perfect 10-year-old, the perfect 15-year-old. And we can find ourselves forgetting that that is absolutely impossible. It is almost like that we want wrinkle-free children from 0 to 90, that we don't want them to have any trouble, to do no wrong, every landing be soft, and life goes well with them. And we can hyperextend our minds and get ourselves in all sorts of trouble because our 6-year-old is not behaving correctly. One of the things that I have found out a zillion times doing counseling, parental counseling especially, is that all children go through a seasonal dust-up, a season of tension in their life. Usually it's in the teenage years. And this too will pass. In almost all cases, it passes. We all did that. And I think as we think about that transitional period, which is 10, 11, and 12 years of age, it's right in that window there where we go from a child to a young adult. There's no such thing as a teenager. You're either a child or an adult, young adult in this case. But when they go from child to young adult, that is a transitional window that breeds all kinds of insecurity that will create fluctuating behaviors in the child's life. And so we have to keep the end in mind. You could become a thorn in your child's flesh as you micromanage the contours of their fluctuating behaviors throughout the years, because though you might say on your parenting test, I don't expect a perfect 6-year-old, 10-year-old, 15-year-old, but we can parent that way. Some people call this a helicopter parent, helicopter parenting, which is an unfortunate term because it lacks biblical clarity, a clarity that makes it sound better than what it is. Oh, I'm a helicopter parent. I have the hat and the t-shirt. That doesn't sound all that bad. But through a biblical lens, helicopter parenting is more about selfishness, faithlessness, self-reliance, or fear-based parenting. It also shuns the unthinkable possibility that God could be engaging a child in spiritually beneficial ways that appear to fly in the face of your best life now theology. It could be that God is sending them through a rough patch on purpose. He did that with Paul. He does that with all of us. The crucible of suffering, it doesn't necessarily come when a child becomes 25 or older. The crucible of suffering can come early in a child's life, and it could be that God is doing the unthinkable, and you don't want to shun the unthinkable, thinking that could God be engaging my child in a spiritually beneficial way that flies in the face of what I have as a best life now theology? In Luke 14, 26 through 27, Jesus said this hyperbolic statement that I want to get into just a little bit. He says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. If your child becomes an adult who loves God more than he loves himself, his wife, his children, or anyone else, as Jesus was talking about hyperbolically, you can rest assured that he will be okay, regardless of what happens to him. Micromanaging parent will never understand this because their thinking is myopic. They center their focus on the moment, what is going on with the child right now. There could be several reasons for that kind of fear-motivated parenting. The parent is fearful of what the child may become, so he implements authoritarian, smothering control. The parent is lazy and disdains inconveniences, so he legislates morality and behavior. You're such an inconvenience to me. Are you doing this now? The ball game is on. It could be that the parent is concerned about his reputation and how people think about him, so he demands unquestioned obedience. A gospelized parent is less tense, less stressed, and less angry, while more restful in God's sovereign control of all matters, big and small. Rather than trying to iron out all present-day wrinkles in the child's life, he uses those wrinkles to equip the child for the future. This kind of worldview reminds me of a long list of parents who have come to me seeking help for their children who are bouncing off the walls. Today, many of those children are God-loving adults. During the season of parental uncertainty, the parents were in a tizzy. I typically tell a parent like this how God saved me when I was 25 years old. 10 years earlier, I was in jail. What you're seeing in your child should not derail your faith in what God can do for your child. I am not saying that God will save your child because he does not regenerate every person. Everybody is not going to heaven. Some children do reject God. Some children live a life of rebellion. Some children die and go to an eternal hell. Then other children experience conversion as adults like me. Though it's more pleasant not to consider these truths, we must not bury our collective heads in the sand and play pretend. We live in a fallen world. Some people choose to stay in their fallenness, a truth that does not diminish the goodness of God, though it should motivate all parents to reassess their reasons for loving God. Why do you love God? Why are you following Christ? Do you love God when your children do not love God? Do you mature in faith when your children are living out disobedience? Do you carry ongoing guilt for your parental mistakes? What needs to happen in your heart to be free from the guilt of parental mistakes? Does your faith rise or fall according to your parenting successes or failures? Or do the works of Jesus stabilize your soul? You're resting in the works of another, the perfect one, Jesus Christ. Maybe these questions would be instructive and helpful and insightful for you as you discuss them with your spouse or another super close friend. Trying to manage the future outcomes of your children will always backfire. If the temptation is to control, to smother, to dictate, to overly legislate your children's lives, I appeal to you to reconsider. If you are isolating them from the culture where they will spend their adult lives, I call on you to rethink your parenting methodology. The little people in your home will only be little people in your home for a nanosecond. They may spend 90% of their lives outside of your parental jurisdiction. Equipping them for the future is one of the most useful things that you could do as a parent to help them to live well in the world, which will make up nearly all of their earthly existence. My friend Willie came from Cameroon when he was 19 years old. It was overwhelming in many ways for him to come to America. Willie had no preparation for what our Americanized world was offering him. It was a struggle for him to adjust to a country where he was not equipped to live. He was a foreigner in America, and he had to learn on the fly quickly. The best case scenario for Willie would have been a season of American culture indoctrination while he was still living in his home country, Cameroon. Imagine if he had years of training. This is America. This is what America is like. We're going to give you a long on-ramp before you ever land in America. Now, the good news was that God led him to a good church that befriended, served, and helped and equipped him to live well as a Christian in our American culture. Everyone is not as fortunate as Willie. Some parents rear their children in fear-based contexts that perpetuate dysfunction. They identify the taboos in the culture around them, and they isolate their children from them, the culture, while without realizing the importance of incrementally and biblically introducing them to the culture that they inhabit. These children grow up socially awkward, culturally disengaged, and evangelistically hindered because of their sheltered childhood. They live with inordinate fears about the culture, born out of ignorance, poor parenting, and bad theology. Jesus had scores of unsaved friends. Wait a minute. Actually, all of his friends were unsaved. Jesus came to an unsaved world to live in it, to engage it, to serve it, to convert it. His missionary efforts in our world are legend. There have been books written about how he lived in the world while not overcome by the world. The socially awkward, ill-prepared child cannot be like Jesus. He'll have to create a holy huddle that is sequestered from the culture while dropping Bible tracts like breadcrumbs that hopefully will lead those outside of his camp, to his church doors. What he can't do is penetrate his culture with the gospel of Christ. He's afraid to, and his parents never equipped him to live in the world. And when I say introducing your child to the world, I am not talking about teaching them how to curse, how to drink beer, how to watch porn, how to smoke cigarettes, how to do other sin-festive things like what our culture does. I am talking about familiarizing your child with the ways of the world while teaching him how to not imbibe in the world. Some of the future adult goals for children are not to be surprised or repulsed or tempted by the culture. You don't want your children to step into the culture as adults and be shocked and surprised by it. You don't want them to be repulsed by it. You don't want them to be tempted by it, and you definitely don't want them to elevate themselves above the culture and look down on the culture as though they are superior to it, self-righteousness. Whatever they receive from God will be a gift that He has given to them. They have not earned it because of any merit or specialness on their part. And so our children should not be surprised or repulsed or tempted or self-righteously judge our culture. If we don't teach them how to do this, like a child reaching up to touch the hot stove because he did not know it was hot, then the culture will burn their hands. The thing that we meticulously keep from them, will hurt them. Going back to what I led with initially, your home is a laboratory. You should continually stretch and challenge your children so you can understand them better while teaching them more effectively. If you have more than one child, then you know very well about their uniqueness, which is why you cannot do cookie cutter parenting. For example, to say that alcohol is evil and you'll go to hell if you drink it is a fear-motivated parental ignorance. While you may bind the conscience of one child as he treats alcohol like the plague, your next child may not be so motivated. Children need loving instruction, not fear-laced tactics. Each child needs your time, nurturing, instruction, biblical clarity. You do this by talking to them, asking them diverse questions while motivating them according to how God has made them. You discern where each child is spiritually, mentally, emotionally. You seek to determine their theological awareness and their intuition to pick up on scriptural truths. With these kinds of assessments, you begin plotting a trajectory that will lead them to the cross and into the culture. Christ came to where we were. He converted us to His way of thinking and told us how to go into all the world. We want to do this similarly with our children. We want to engage them, envision them, and equip them to enter the mission field. A couple of questions to think about. Do you have a good working knowledge of how God created your child? Do you understand your child? Are you considering them and their uniqueness? Number two, do you give blanket edicts to your children, not considering their uniqueness? Number three, how are you customizing your parenting to each child? If you are not already, I appeal to you to think from an eschatological perspective, looking into the future, how things can be for your child. Stretch your children. Give them opportunities to succeed and fail. Your home is a laboratory where it's not about passing or failing. It's a training ground where both passing and failing are opportunities to emulate Christ as you're preparing them for that future day when they step out of your home as a man or woman under God's authority. You have an eschatological perspective on parenting. If your child succeeds, you want to discern any self-righteousness or self-reliant tendencies that may be laced in their success. Success is an excellent opportunity to identify, isolate, and affirm humility. It's the test of prosperity. If your child fails, you can encourage him by showing him what went wrong and why it went wrong. You can teach him how to discern the heart issues that typically accompany failure, like fear, like self-reliance, like perfectionism. Perfectionism, for example, will lead to procrastination. The person who always wants to get it right will be a person that will kick the can down the road. They'll be less tempted about jumping into it because they can't think of doing it in any other outcome but it being perfect. And of course, that is not realistic. Failure and success are pictures of their future lives. They will win, they will lose. You have a fantastic opportunity to walk them through these outcomes today in your laboratory while equipping them to live well in the future with an eschatological perspective. Sheltering is an essential part of parenting. Parents understand this, but sheltering and fear-based protection should never be the totality of a child's life. If it is, your children will be culturally confused and spiritually tempted when their time comes to stand without your guidance. It may seem prudent and convenient to shelter your children today, but if you do and always shelter them, then beware. You'll be hard-pressed to know them the way that you need to know them because you never set them up for success or failure. You will learn your children when the testing comes. It's better to create those contexts while they are with you rather than waiting for them to leave you and then they flounder in the culture because failure will come in their future as they live in the culture. Success will too, and both of those will be significant tests for them, and you want to put them through those tests as early as possible, many times on repeat while they're in the laboratory. One way to equip our children for the future was by connecting them with adults. This is what we did with our children. We wanted to put them with other people, meaning other adults, not other kids. They have always socialized with adults ever since that they could walk and talk. Our children have been hanging out with adults all of their lives from the time they were, well, from the time that they were born, actually, but they would remember it when they were 2, 3, and 4 years of age. We understood that we had less than 2 decades to instruct them and that they would likely have 70 plus years in an adult world. And so what we wanted to do as parents is strategically and appropriately give them a few adults to interact with while they were young. And I say strategically and appropriately because all adults are not created equal, and so you want to be careful to protect your children as well, not just give them willy-nilly to any adult that comes along. Like all children, they naturally gravitated to their kind, other kids. Thus, we had to be intentional by connecting them with older, bigger, taller, wiser people called adults. Small groups in the local church were good and safe places for this kind of adult training and adult connectivity. Hospitality was also an excellent context as we bring people in our home or we go to other people's homes to where they can hang out with adults. If you ask our children today, they would say that they prefer adults over any other type of people. They like talking to them. They're not afraid of them. They engage and interact with them well. I hope that you will ask the Spirit to illuminate your mind with some practical ways that you could prepare your child to live well in their future lives. Parenting is hard work, duh. This challenge is why your first call to action is to ask God how to proceed. Each situation, each family, each child, they're all different. And though I do not believe what we did is the best for you, and I say that because I want you to hear that clearly, because I want to share with you a few things that we did with our children. And again, I would not want you to map this over your children like this is the way, walk ye in it. No, this is a way. This is not the way. And again, I want you to hear that clearly. The things that I'm going to share with you, and there's only 4, but they're merely suggested. I want to provoke you to think about the uniqueness of your child, how you can use your laboratory by bringing the culture back into your laboratory in an appropriate way so that they can learn to interact with the culture in a controlled setting so that they can be prepped, have that long runway, so when they step out into the culture as adults, they will be well prepared. And so you ask the Spirit of God to give you a few competent leaders for advice, people who know you, people who know your children. They should have wise input for things that you can introduce, ways that you can introduce your children to the world. And so I'll just give you 4 categories. They're under theology, finances, culture, and language. These are 4 things that they need to know when they are adults. So theology. We began teaching our children ST when they were about 4 and 5 years of age. ST is systematic theology. Bibliology, theology proper, Christology, pneumatology, hermeneology, anthropology, soteriology, etc. And then all the words that are under those primary constructs of ST. Things like omnipotence and omniscience and omnipresence and anthropomorphic expressions, hypostatic union, etc. Teach your children theology young. They will respect you for it, and they have an incredible capacity to understand theology, and so you want to equip them, because actually theology is the most important thing that they will take into their lives. If you want them to take anything into their adulthood, you want them to take a solid foundation, and a solid foundation is a theological one, and so teach them theology. Number 2, finances. We set up bank accounts for each of our children when they were about 5 and 6 years of age. They loved getting suckers from the bank tellers and putting $10 in the bank once a month as we went out on daddy dates and teaching them about stewardship, finances, and there was other ways that we taught them finances as well as they had their piggy banks and so forth. But teaching them finances as young children will do them well when they become adults. Number 3 is culture. At a young age, we would watch certain dramas and documentaries about things that showed real life, again, appropriate for each child. They learned about drugs and alcohol and other cultural problems while teaching them the importance of the law and respecting police officers. And again, all of that is monitored and scrutinized strategically and intentionally and appropriately, but bringing the culture as you can, according to each child, into your home, and where you can bring definition and commentary to what they are observing and teaching them about these things early on. So there was theology, there was finances, there was culture. And then finally, language. When we had the sex talk, for example, I started teaching them a theology of language, including curse words, motivations of the heart, the words we use and the motivations for using those words and bringing in words and language that they had not heard before, and that happened around the season of the sex talk. Now, with that in mind, I do have a free book for you. It is called The Talk. What I just shared with you is one of the chapters in that book, incrementally introducing your children to the world. I want you to have that chapter, all the others. There's philosophical teaching about parenting from early on, the different stages, the dependent, the interdependent, independent stage, leading all the way up to the actual sex talk, which is the nuts and bolts, the practicalities of having that talk for a 2 or 3 day retreat in your child's life as you walk them through the sex talk. But all of it's there, parenting from zero to adulthood, including what I just shared with you. And I want you to have that book. We have people who invest in our ministry. They believe in what we're doing. They love what we're doing as we practically teach the message of Christ to people around the world. And so they invest. So they support us monthly, some annually. One-time donations, and because of their investment, we're able to build out these resources, as you see here, and then give them away. And that is our privilege and our joy. And so I want you to go to our store at lifeovercoffee.com and get the book, The Talk. Download it and let your friends know. For those of you who do biblical counseling, discipleship, mentoring, and you have a couple in your church that have toddlers, for example, this would be an outstanding little book for them. It will help them so much, and it's our gift to you. And so I want you to get it and let them know about it as well. For those of you who can invest in our ministry, if you would do that, I would really appreciate it. We need your help. We need people to keep our resources free. By the grace of God, we will keep them free, but we cannot do that without those who have the ability to invest. And so if you can contribute to our ministry, please do so. And then as you do that on our website, for example, go over to our store and get the free book, The Talk, and all the other free books that are waiting for you there.
Thanks for joining us. Learn more and get access to other resources at lifeovercoffee.com.